It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. School starts at Iowa State University and the University of Northern Iowa on August 17th. That's just about 3 weeks from now. The University of Iowa is starting classes on August 24th, and Iowa's smaller colleges and universities have each made their own plans for what will undoubtedly be a strange and challenging fall semester. This hour, Return to Learn for Higher Education. We'll talk about how colleges and universities are planning for the fall semester and the obstacles they're facing. I'll talk with medical experts and others throughout the hour. We also want to hear from you. Are you employed by an institution of higher learning? How do you feel about your school's plans? Are you a student or the parent of a student? What are your concerns? Have you decided to take a gap year? Let us know. You can give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And my first guest today is John Lawrence, Vice President of Iowa State University Extension and Outreach and leader of the Fall Planning Committee for ISU. Hello, John.
Good morning, Charity.
Thank you for being here. Now, we know that Iowa State University, you are the first of the Regent Universities to release your plans. We know that you are starting early. You are welcoming students back to campus. You do not plan to have the semester continue after Thanksgiving. Tell me, once students get back to campus, what will classes be like?
Well, they will be different. In a variety of ways. We're reducing the capacity in the classrooms down to 50% of the normal capacity. We're requiring cloth face coverings or face shields in the classrooms in places where you can't social distance. And then the classes themselves, some will be entirely online, maybe with discussion groups that will be in person. Some will be a hybrid mix where they may be online one day and in person another. And then we'll still have a lot of in-person classes as well.
With staff, faculty, lecturers, adjuncts, et cetera, how much control do they have over whether they'll be with their students face-to-face?
So it's been a multi-tier process. Early on, as we started the scheduling, faculty and their departments started talking about which classes were certainly going to be online just because of the size. And there's limits on how big our rooms are, so some things we're going to have to go online. Then we've also told faculty that if they have concerns about being in the classroom, to work with their department chairs. There was a process to how they could fulfill their teaching responsibilities, perhaps without being in the classroom. And certainly staff and graduate students and others, there is what we call alternative work arrangements, AWAs, that are still going on now. People can apply for that to find out, again, we still have to get our job done, but how do we do that in a way that...
John, are you still there?
Yes.
Okay. You just disappeared there for a second. You said, how do we do that in a way that...
That can address some of the concerns that they have. We still need to deliver educational programming, do our research, serve Iowans. That's our job. But how do we do it in a way to assure the health and safety of faculty, staff, and students?
Tell me about student housing. I think that that is a concern for a lot of people sending their kids off to college. I'm sure it's a concern for a number of those students as well. How do you live in a dormitory setting, for example, and stay healthy?
Yeah, so again, we're requiring face coverings for all of the people living in the dormitories, except for when they're in their room, either by themselves or with a roommate. When they're eating, they can take it off to eat. We are offering more dining options, so we will have more grab-and-go meals. We'll have different locations around campus where they can pick them up so they don't have to come back to the dormitories for their meal. We're going to limit seating in those areas. There's going to be more cleaning. We're adding additional staff to help with cleaning. We're going to have guidance around, limiting the number of people in elevators, encouraging more people to use the stairs. And a big part is messaging to our students to help them stay safe and hold others accountable on social distancing, no large gatherings, wearing their face coverings.
How will you respond when a student in a dormitory tests positive for COVID-19?
So we have set aside rooms for the students in Department of Residence Housing, whether that's dormitories or apartments. We have set aside spaces for isolation for those who have tested positive, and quarantine space, so if those who have been in contact with that individual. We're doing our own testing in partnership with Iowa Department of Health, but we're doing testing here on campus. At our veterinary diagnostic lab, we'll get the results back quickly. Those students will be moved into isolation. They'll have a private room. They've got a refrigerator and microwave in there. We'll have people living on site in those dormitories that will assure, check in on the students and as they go through the isolation or those that are quarantined.
And will all classes that are taking place have an online option for those students who are quarantined or students who may just not feel safe going to class?
We are working to address that. So, as I said, some will be online from the beginning. Some will be a blend, which will always have an online option. And even for those that are in person, we're instructing our instructors to think about, okay, what if you have students out as in isolation or in quarantine? How will they make up things? For the lecture classes, it's relatively simple, and we can make those plans. For the hands-on laboratory or studio experiences, it's more difficult. But we're still working to make sure that those students can continue progress through the semester and towards their degree.
I realize that you've worked incredibly hard to put this plan together, and there are so many unknowns going into this. But how are you feeling given the spike in COVID cases we've seen in Ames and in Iowa City in particular this summer as students did return to those towns?
Yes, we continue to watch all of those statistics. We work very closely with the city of Ames and Story County, and in fact, working with them in partnership about messaging, not just here on campus, but as you cross Lincoln Way into campus town or go elsewhere in Ames, we still expect our students to follow our Cyclone Cares message of wearing the face covering, social distancing, hand washing, and stay home if you're sick. City of Ames, I believe, has passed an ordinance saying bars should follow the governor's proclamation about limiting capacity and practicing social distancing. So we're very encouraged about that as well. We also, as you think about it, our students come from all over the state and even in other states. As we've modeled how we think this will go, we've looked at the zip code of where those students are coming from. To try to anticipate, what's happening. We're in the process of updating that as the semester approaches.
What are your biggest concerns? What are you most worried about?
Fair question. I think we continue to learn about the virus as science continues to evolve. And so are there things that we hadn't anticipated, I think, is one. I'm hopeful that our students, our faculty, and our staff fully buy in on the face coverings and the social distancing, the hand washing, staying home if they're sick. Those are proven practices, and we will continue to reinforce those. We launched yesterday our social media campaign, but it also matches up with our signage and our other messages that these are really important. If students value being on campus, and we heard that from many, many students, that they wanted to come back, they want to see their friends, they want to have graduation. If those things are going to happen, they have to do their part as well by doing the precautions that we're asking of them.
John Lawrence, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you, Charity.
John Lawrence, Vice President of Iowa State University Extension and Outreach and leader of the Fall Planning Committee for that university. Of course, they're starting classes on August 17th. And with me now, Dr. Eli Perencevich, Professor of Internal Medicine and Epidemiology at the University of Iowa. Dr. Perencevich, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. Good morning.
And we just have a couple of minutes before we get to a break. We will talk much more throughout the hour. But listening to John Lawrence describe the plans at Iowa State University, I know that you've looked at the plans for the other universities in the state as well. How are you feeling about these plans in general?
I just want to acknowledge the tremendous amount of work that all the folks like Dr. Lawrence and his team and those at University of Iowa have put in to making these plans. These are very thoughtful plans. They're science-based. They're realistic in many ways. But I think the kind of one concern is that a lot of these plans were done in the spring and early summer when cases were looking, you know, the rates of infection were a lot lower in the country, and particularly in Iowa and, you know, Story and Johnson County. And as you mentioned, since June, we've had this huge uptick of cases in the age group of, you know, students. We don't know if they are students, but many of them probably are.
They're in their 20s, 18 to 25.
Yeah, so they're in that age group. And so there's a concern with opening restaurants and bars and, you know, people wanting to get back to normal, that we're seeing high rates of cases. And it's unclear whether all these careful plans can bring students back safely with such high levels of infections. That's my main concern.
There are so many different elements that go into these plans, and I know they've worked hard to come up with contingency plans, et cetera, but it does feel like it's hard to turn this ship. These are huge organizations, and if things go wrong, it's going to be hard to react, isn't it?
I think so, yeah. There are a lot of ships that need to turn all at the same time in this country. Countries that have successfully opened colleges, like Taiwan, have massive national efforts to reduce spread, massive local efforts, and then they can be successful in their colleges and universities.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. With me, Dr. Eli Perencevich, Professor of Internal Medicine and Epidemiology at the University of Iowa. You are also welcome to join this conversation with your questions and your concerns. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about Return to Learn, the Higher Education Edition. Of course, we've got universities in the state opening in just about 3 weeks, both Iowa State University and the University of Northern Iowa. Classes start at the University of Iowa on August 24th, and many other colleges and universities around the state have made their own plans for fall. We'd love to hear from you this hour. If you work at one of these institutions of higher education, let us know how you're feeling about the plan, what your questions are. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We're already getting a number of responses. This is from a professor at Iowa State University. I'm feeling pretty good about it since the requirement to wear masks was made. This is from a staff member at the University of Iowa. My concern is that I strongly suspect we'll go back in 2 to 6 weeks later. There will be a massive outbreak that will send everyone home, not because the university isn't taking precautions, but because of all the hard work will be undone when students are off campus where bars are open and mask wearing is optional. Closing campus down in September, October will be chaotic and ultimately expensive when housing and dining fees are returned. Student academic progression will be damaged, and some faculty, staff, and students will lose their lives or be permanently handicapped by contracting the disease. It will also affect the local school district as well, although we have learned that in Iowa City, schools will begin fully online in the Iowa City community schools. With me this hour, Dr. Eli Perencevich, Professor of Internal Medicine and Epidemiology at the University of Iowa. And Dr. Perencevich, from what we know about how COVID is transmitted, looking at life on college campuses, where do you feel the most dangerous areas or the most important areas to really focus on controlling the passage of COVID would be?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. So I think we need to think of universities not as a kind of a ship by themselves, but kind of in an entire harbor with lots of boats. And the students will be and faculty will be moving between all of these boats. And so no matter how well we are, how well we do at preventing the spread in the classroom, and I think everything that Professor Lawrence mentioned about distancing and more dining options and wearing masks are critical there, as soon as a student or faculty member leaves campus, they're probably going to be following different rules. Unlike a lot of states, our localities have not been allowed to have universal masking policies. We've opened up bars and restaurants without these kind of strict measures. And we know that the virus spreads indoors in these places, particularly if you're doing things like talking loudly, or singing. And these kind of things happen on college campuses and bars and restaurants. And so I think the kind of Achilles heel of this entire response is a non-uniform masking policy across the state. I think we can't hope that people will wear masks because of peer pressure. We know from surveys of college students, one that just came out from University of Connecticut, that most students returning there don't expect to wear masks because of peer pressure when they leave the college campus and go to social events. So unless we can address kind of masking, and that's the only real intervention we have, honestly, distancing is good and staying at home, but when we're out in the community, masking is our only vaccine right now, and universal masking is so critical from what everything we're learning. So I think that needs to be the focus of safe returning for all colleges across the state.
We have a number of callers on the line already, and a couple of people are asking about the same subject. So let's go to Diane in Bettendorf. Hello, Diane.
Hi.
Hi, what's your concern?
I have a concern about the contact tracing. I know I heard John Lawrence talk about what happens to the student himself if he is tested positive, that he's going to be gone into a quarantine room. Realizing that not everybody lives in student housing, my child lives in an apartment. But my question is, if my child is in class with that person who tests positive, what will be done as far as letting my child know? Around here in Bettendorf, if a restaurant has a positive employee, they close down for 2 weeks and do thorough cleaning and then reopen. Will that classroom have that done? What about the bathroom, that, you know, all of those situations?
Yeah.
How will that information be transmitted to my child?
Diane, thank you so much for bringing up that important question. And of course, Dr. Perencevich, you're not actually a representative of the University of Iowa and their plan, but I do want to have you address Diane's question. And before you do that, I also want to work in Dirk's question here. He says, what contact tracing would really be feasible with students in dorms, gyms, bars, football stadiums, on CAM buses, and in groups of up to 50? Can we even do contact tracing given this environment? I think both of those questions work well together. Dr. Perencevich, what do you think?
Yeah, so there are multiple levels. I think, Diane's first question about contact tracing in a classroom, I think that can be done because we know what students and faculty members might have been in the room. That'll be communicated. I'm sure there are plans to clean aggressively, even if there aren't cases, because that's one of the best ways to prevent the spread. So I think that will happen. But then, as the other person mentioned, that it's going to be incredibly difficult to do contact tracing outside of the campus. So we would know who's in the dorm, but we're not going to know who was in a bar or restaurant or these other situations. And kind of back to that University of Connecticut survey of 2,700 students, they actually shared that they'd be reluctant to even share contact tracing information with the authorities doing the contact tracing information. They had some concerns about privacy at these social events that they might not want to share. And so that's another Achilles heel. We know we need to do testing and quarantining of positive people, no matter where we are in society. And then we have to do effective contact tracing. And this kind of survey information makes me concerned that we can't. And I think the kind of DNA of the United States is to be very individualistic, and which it usually is, you know, been a success of our country. But in a pandemic, we're all going to need to work together. We're all going to need to wear masks. We're all going to need to share information about contact tracing if we're going to successfully control this pandemic.
I want to bring somebody else into the conversation. And again, you're welcome to share your thoughts. 866-780-9100. Tweet us at Iowa Public Radio or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Dr. Krista Johnson is also here, clinical professor of internal medicine at the University of Iowa. Dr. Johnson, thank you for being here.
Hi, Charity. Thanks for having me. I'm glad to be here.
And I want to ask you before we talk, really mine you for medical advice. You, of course, are involved with the medical school at the University of Iowa. How has medical education changed given COVID-19? That's not the kind of thing that you can easily do online.
Right. Yeah, no. And it's been definitely a challenge, especially for our students who are in their clinical clerkships where they're learning to take care of patients directly. So I do work with medical students in my clinic and I supervise residents in their clinics and am part of the educational leadership for the residency program. And we have had to just kind of make changes, you know, daily for a while, weekly. But the clerkship students were initially when this sent home and said, you're not essential. We don't want you to get sick. And they were kind of sent home to learn on Zoom. And then recently we have figured out ways to bring them back safely into caring for patients. So we have students now back in the hospital caring for patients. We have students back in clinics caring for patients. And we've really had to just make sure that we can ensure their safety. So to do that, we're requiring the students wear a surgical mask and a face shield when they're caring for patients and when they cannot physically distance from others by more than 6 feet. And so the students have been very good about that, and they're glad to be back. They're glad to see patients. And the patients have been more than willing to talk to them and work with them, which is great. And in the hospitals, they're just trying to be really careful and, again, requiring that they wear their personal protective equipment, and they're trained to take care of themselves. So we had to kind of include that in our education, teaching them how to stay safe, you know, while caring for patients. That also includes wiping down your workstation with Virex and staying there and, you know, doing hand hygiene frequently. So just lots of things to kind of pay attention to.
So you work in an environment where you see people taking incredible precautions to avoid infection with COVID-19. How do you think that will translate into classrooms and dormitories and city bars, et cetera?
Yes. So when my kids go around town, I have a college sophomore and a high school senior, and they walk around town with their masks and their face shields on because, you know, so many people in the community are not wearing masks and face shields right now. So I do think, you know, as Eli has said, I think really I'm worried about that. And so I think we can stay safe at work. I'm very confident in that. And I think we can keep our students and our residents safe. But I do worry about when they go out in the community, you know, we have to really encourage them to continue to stay safe in the community. And even our employees, our, you know, physicians and nurses and medical assistants and pharmacists and everyone who works in the hospital, we're having to remind all of us that we need to stay safe, you know, in the community. So that's why I really think I've been really advocating personally for mandated facial coverings, as Eli talked about. That's the, we know it works. And I just think that's going to be so important for our community and state and nation to get things under control if we want our students back in the classroom and we want businesses to be able to run safely. And I think it, you know, mandating it really kind of takes the judgment out of it. It's not a personal choice and, you know, you don't have to be judgmental about it. But I think I think that would really help enforce that message rather than just hoping students would handle that. Again, Eli talked about peer pressure and students saying they wouldn't wear masks. So I think it'd be really important to get that control in the community so that all of this planning that's going on with our, you know, colleges and universities and higher, you know, graduate schools can actually be effective.
As an educator and as a parent, of course, you know, there are people listening, I'm sure, who are just thinking the dangers are too great. Why are we even trying to do this? Why do you think it's important to try to do this?
Well, as a parent, you know, I worried a lot about my kids' mental health. You know, how are they going to do not being, you know, they're at an age where socialization is so important to them, and how are they going to do with not being able to see their friends? You know, both my kids did online school starting in March, and, you know, the schools did the best they could, but it definitely was not as effective or as good as in person. Especially my daughter has a lot of science labs and she's trying to do these online, and it's hard to do that. And my son wants to be a professional musician, and now there's no band. And so, you know, they're not, so there's a lot of, you know, kids who do sports. There's a lot of things that kids, you know, want to be able to do that they're not able to do. And so I think that, you know, online learning, I mean, I think that, you know, our school board in town, I think they had to make a very hard decision. I think they made the right decision right now. But I do think that, you know, for higher education, I think people are not going to have the experience they hoped for. I think my daughter said this is kind of not the college experience that I imagined. And for my son, who's trying to look at colleges and needs, you know, we're not able to visit, he's not able to, you know, meet with professors who, you know, musical professors who he would need to meet and play for. So, you know, I do think it's just going to, it really, it's not the same education. And then I also think, you know, we're fortunate, but I think for people who have kids with learning disabilities or English as a second language, or people of color, there's a lot of families that are, this is going to impact even more.
Yeah, there was an article in the Cedar Rapids Gazette just this morning showing that fewer students are applying for financial assistance, which is an early indicator that maybe many students who need financial assistance are just not going to go to college this year. And of course, if they don't go to college this year, will they come back to college? I think that's a very big question and a big concern. I have this email from a professor at Drake University. I'm not in any of the rooms where decisions are being made, but in the absence of a dramatic decline in the relevant indicators, in my opinion, it's foolish for any campus, primary, secondary, or post-secondary, to reopen for in-person instruction. At the college level, we can make the academic spaces as safe as possible, but the reality is that we would be gathering a large number of people whose decision-making skills are still forming, surrounding them with thousands of temptations, i.e. one another, and then counting on them behaving in ways college students do not consistently behave. Within 6 weeks of return, I predict that many campuses will have significant outbreaks and the cost in public health outcomes and perhaps even fatalities will be substantial. I want to be with my students, but it's just not sensible right now. He says, I'm also the parent of a Hawkeye student, and I'm equally concerned about his welfare. And Dr. Perencevich, let's talk about college students, people who are this age. We know quite a lot about their decision-making abilities, skills, their priorities, and how things are very fluid in a social setting. Although students of this age may not be particularly at risk of dying of COVID-19, it does strike me that they are very much at risk of contracting it.
Yes, I think that's well said. And the email that you just read was, I think, the main concern for all of us. I think the students, it's not fair. I think a lot of the language around this can seem judgmental. But at that age, it's normal to want to meet people. I mean, this is when you meet your significant others and, you know, you start really connecting and thinking about your future. And for a lot of kids, it's you know, students, it's the first time they've left their home. And so there's a lot thrown on them, and then to throw a pandemic on them. And it's just complicated. And that's why I think if we think about putting guardrails up for all of us, and it's not just students. I mean, I see a lot of adults went to a local, you know, grocery store, and a bunch of the adults were not wearing masks indoors. And this is not wise behavior. You know, you're lower risk certainly walking through a grocery store for 15 minutes than you are in a bar or restaurant. But yeah, so I think we need to kind of think about this realistically and acknowledge who these students are, where they are in their life, and provide guardrails. And I think the schools can do it within their walls, but we're really going to need the state and localities to provide more guardrails when they're outside of the walls. And this needs to extend to others.
We're going to take another short break. Dr. Eli Perencevich, you'll stay with us, professor of internal medicine and epidemiology at the University of Iowa. Dr. Krista Johnson, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you, Charity.
Dr. Krista Johnson is clinical professor of internal medicine at the University of Iowa. Coming up in just a moment, I'll talk with a professor at Iowa State University and also president of the University of Iowa Graduate and Professional Student Government. We'll talk about grad students at the University of Iowa in a few minutes. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about returning to learn in higher education. We're just 3 weeks out from the start of the fall semester at a number of institutions of higher learning in the state of Iowa. And of course, every school, every university, every college has worked hard to create a plan that they believe will give their students quality education and keep their students, faculty, and staff safe. But there are many, many questions. It's a very difficult situation for everyone involved. And we're going to bring a couple more people into the conversation here in just a moment. With me, Dr. Eli Perencevich, professor of internal medicine and epidemiology at the University of Iowa. And just before the break, you were saying that you feel like we need more controls from the government level or in localities in the state of Iowa. Of course, we do not have a mask mandate in this state. And I just want to clarify that cities and communities in Iowa don't seem to have the freedom or the right to create a mask mandate in their communities. So in advocating for that, that has to come from the state level. At least that's what we've learned so far here in Iowa. I want to ask you before we get to our other guests, how do you feel about student health centers on campuses? You know, obviously at the University of Iowa, there's a large hospital, but student health is usually a clinic that serves the population on campus, usually a pretty healthy population on campus. Do you feel like student health clinics are equipped to deal with this?
That's an excellent question. I don't have enough information specifically on student health clinics here or elsewhere, but I hope that they have the personal protective equipment necessary. At University of Iowa, we assume that almost, anyone that walks in our door could have, coronavirus. And so we treat everyone with wearing PPE. We're all wearing face shields. And when we see patients, a mask and a face shield. And so I hope that level of PPE is available for student health and, distancing in waiting rooms and things like this. Excellent question.
I want to turn now to Michael Bougea. He is a professor of journalism at the Greenlee School of Journalism and Communications at Iowa State University. Hello, Michael.
Hey, Charity. Good to hear your voice.
Nice.
It's a great show so far. I've been listening intently.
Nice to talk to you. And so as a professor, what choices were you given when planning your own fall semester?
Well, I believe in face-to-face communication, and I think, my whole research is about the importance of face-to-face communication. So the whole idea of moving classes online didn't impact me as much as it has impacted other professors, and I want to explain why. I impress on my students that they have to learn how to listen. And because that was always my focus, I gave them everything, all my notes, all my websites, all the lectures, uploaded videos. All that was done when I was teaching face-to-face so that I would be in the class interacting with them, and they wouldn't have to worry about taking notes. They could listen for content rather than to mimic answers back on a test. But when we moved to online instruction in March, that's when my, and I know you'll appreciate this, I'm a broadcast journalist from long ago, so all my Zoom sessions were produced the way you would produce a TV show. And what I mean by that is it's timed, it uses multimedia in different ways, audio, visual, annotated text, zoom in when the professor speaks, zoom out when we're looking at a video or at some content, and timing that so that they can interact. Now, this whole thing about online classes is interesting because no one has really defined what an online class is. A professor, you know, what we have heard in the Regents Institution is make them asynchronous. In other words, so that students can access them at any time without worrying about connections and things like that. And I think the emphasis on asynchronicity has caused some people not to really invest in an online class the way they should. For instance, a professor can throw his or her notes online and say that's an online class.
Of course, every professor will also have the ability to do that to varying degrees, and they're not all going to have a broadcast background. We are going to run out of time this hour, so I do want to focus you on the choices that you had, because you also had to consider not just the quality of the education, but your own health and your family's health.
Yeah, I'm 68 and I'm at risk, and the university has been very good at protecting its staff, and I think that's important. But the point I was making earlier is that we really all have to invest in this type of an online class, or otherwise students are not going to get the education that they need if we continue to migrate toward online. I mean, there's vast differences in skill sets concerning what constitutes an online class. Yeah. And there's vast differences in assessment of how important those classes are. So the point that I'm making is that sooner or later, if this is not put under control with coordination from the governor's office all the way down through the university systems, we are going to have those outbreaks that many of your professors have been complaining about. So what I'm recommending is that we all take a look at what constitutes an effective online class. And there are vast differences. So I'm concerned about the education.
That sounds like we have a whole nother show that we can do for sure on that, Michael. I do want to, before we let you go and move on to our next guest,
sure.
When you were making these decisions personally, I've heard from a lot of people who teach at universities who, of course, we know that the students in their 20s and their upper teens are likely to survive COVID-19. And of course, we are also learning about some very serious repercussions that they may experience even if they do survive COVID-19. So I'm not trying to diminish that at all. But so many professors, so many instructors are vulnerable themselves or have vulnerable family members. And that's got to be a really scary idea to think about going back into the classroom.
Yeah, it's definitely one for me. I have a special needs child, too, and I don't know what his schedule is going to be. And, out of this discussion about online classes and about education, we've left out the thousands of special needs students who don't understand COVID, who don't understand mask restrictions, who, if they stay at home, are liable to burst in at any time when you're teaching a class. So this is what I'm actually hoping that we get at some point in the state of Iowa is some top-down leadership that coordinates education at all levels so that we can be safe, not only based on what our central administration is doing, and they're doing great things at Iowa State, but that we don't lose out because gyms are open, because bars are open, because there's no mask requirement. This is what's on the mind of faculty. And one more quick thing. Now, faculty who are doing face-to-face classes with all the restrictions that have been imposed on them for social distancing are working double time. They're not just showing up at a place to teach. They're working very, very hard. Now, what I fear for them is they've invested the whole summer trying to figure out how to do these blended courses. And if we have to all go back to online, it's going to be a terrific burden, not only on faculty and staff. So we do need a coordinated effort. The Regents universities are economic centers, And because they are economic centers, if we're concerned about the economy in the state of Iowa, we have to take into account what might happen if we don't coordinate this from the state level all the way through higher education and K through 12.
Michael, so many important things to think about. Thank you so much for your time today, and best of luck this semester. Michael Bugea is a professor of journalism at the Greenlee School of Journalism and Communication at Iowa State University. And I want to turn now to Mackenzie Graham, president of the University of Iowa Graduate and Professional Student Government and a law student at the University of Iowa College of Law. Mackenzie, welcome to the show.
Hi, Charity. Thank you so much for having me on today. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you for being here. And of course, we all know that graduate students teach or assist in teaching many courses at our state universities. And we've talked a lot about professors, et cetera. But grad students are a huge part of what makes a university function. Tell me a little bit about what you've been told about the role that graduate students will be continuing to play in education.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think you said it really well. Graduate students do play a very important role in the functions and the teachings that go on at our universities. So at GPSG, Graduate Professional Student Government, we've been hearing from a lot of different students. We have, you know, of course, very different situations depending on which college the students are in. So the law school is going to function a little differently than the College of Dentistry, than the College of Pharmacy, et cetera. So specifically from the TA perspective or the teaching assistant perspective, we've been hearing a bit of a mixed emotions on things. Overall, most people have said that they think at least the University of Iowa has done a really good job of preparing. They will be providing masks, face shields, hand sanitizer, which is huge. While we recognize that the risk will never be zero, especially this semester, our administration is working really hard that we're safe and prepared. That said, the bottom line is that grad and professional students are really seeking, kind of what some of your other guests have already said, kind of appropriate coordinated guidance and support and flexibility to adapt their studies, their work as TAs or research assistants, and their projects. So from one student who they had expressed concern about having to be put in a position to enforce rules about wearing PPE if we'll say students don't want to or refuse to wear it. So they've recommended, one or two designated faculty from the specific department as a first point of contact if they need guidance or help dealing with potentially uncooperative students. And then another TA had expressed some anxiety about having to interact with a large number of students per week. So they had said that they expect to interact with about 75 students per week. And, the TA's health is put at risk every time they step into a classroom. So, they had mentioned, would it be possible to set up a rotation of teaching sections? That way TAs face only, let's say, 25 students per week instead of 75, something like that. So lots of different perspectives we're hearing.
Yeah, and a lot of different concerns. And the newest one this week is the concern about whether or not international students would be allowed to stay at their university if classes go online. A lot of graduate students come from other places in the world, and we know that there's been pushback on that, but we don't have a resolution to that. How are people responding?
Well, the good news is that after the decision, when was that, Tuesday? That was some great news, because as of right now, we fully expect all of our international students that had intended to come back will be able to, despite whatever format their classes are in, be it hybrid, blended, synchronous, asynchronous. So that's really important. That said, you're right, the international graduate students, they definitely have unique risks depending on their family situation, maybe back in their home country. If travel gets restricted again, that could present some problems. So there's definitely a lot that just to be aware of, and I think to plan ahead as a part of that coordinated effort moving into the fall.
Now, students at every level, especially in scientific study, have lab courses that really cannot be done online. And I know that a lot of labs at the universities are open, have been working throughout the summer. Tell me what your concerns are or how things are going with that.
Yeah, also from like the clinic perspective, so one college dentistry student had mentioned they were just really seeking a concrete plan for what will happen if students get sick and need to miss clinics, that kind of hands-on, can't be done virtually experiential learning, including patient contact, which is really important at the College of Medicine, College of Dentistry, College of Nursing, and they were just wondering if there will be the possibility of disciplinary action for those who do not follow guidelines in the clinics or the labs. And then I know we're almost out of time here, but I also do want to get in, similar to some of your earlier guests, many graduate and professional students do also have partners, spouses, children at home. And so there's also that consideration that students who have college kids are very concerned about, you know, sending their children back to school, or if they're in the Iowa City school district, now that there's at least the fall semester is going to be virtual for Iowa City schools, how are they going to balance studies, work, facilitating their children learning from home? There's just going to be need to be a lot of flexibility and, a lot of grace, recognizing everybody comes from different circumstances and different individual situations. So,
Mackenzie, thank you so much for talking with me today. Mackenzie Graham is president of the University of Iowa Graduate and Professional Student Government and a law student at the University of Iowa College of Law. And Dr. Eli Perencevich, we have just a minute left here. What do you think the most important thing is for these universities to be thinking about right now in this moment?
I think they need to engage their local county and city leadership and also the state government, really realistically pushing for the only intervention we know that works at this point until there's a vaccine, and that's universal masking mandates. Because the virus can spread with people who don't have symptoms, asymptomatically or pre-symptomatically, we need to get a mask on everyone. We can't hope that someone will only wear a mask if they develop a sore throat or cough. So that's kind of our main mission, is to get a mask on everybody.
Dr. Perencevich, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Dr. Eli Perencevich, professor of internal medicine and epidemiology at the University of Iowa. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio. Our producers are Rick Brewer, Dennis Reese, Caitlin Harrop, and Matt Alvarez. I'm Charity Nebbe. This is Talk of Iowa.